Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. It is so good to be back after the long weekend. How's everybody living? How'd it go for you? What's up? What's on your mind? Good, good show for you today. Let's get started. Let me give you a little bit of a peek of how we do things. Let you inside a little bit. Let you go behind the scenes. So when it comes to the start of a Monday show, there's a lot to choose from. Because when you look at any weekend this time of year, you've got college football, you have the NBA, you have college basketball, there's some hockey. Generally, though, as you know, the focus is on the NFL. Generally, the NFL is my top priority on a Monday morning, and more specifically, one of the elite teams that played on Sunday. Now, in that regard, the weekend's a little bit different. Because Kansas City and the Rams were off. The Saints were one of the six teams that played back on Thanksgiving. The Patriots played the Jets. I'll have something on that later on. So really, what does that leave you with? In terms of the NFL, if I have to start somewhere, where does that leave you? I mean, the other elite team in the National Football League that I'd be talking about would have to be America's team. I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, I said it, and I've been saying it. America's team rolled into Cincinnati to face the Bengals and their old head coach, Hugh Jackson. And they were so new Browns about it that it hurt. Yes, I said new Browns, because they're not like the Browns we knew. These are not your so-called father's Browns. These aren't even last year's Browns. This crew is different. They play with an attitude. They play with swagger. Like DB Demarius Randall, who declared on Friday that if the Bengals didn't have A.J. Green, quote, they're getting their ass beat, end quote. Well, Cincinnati did not have A.J. Green, and they did get their ass beat, 35-20. The new Cleveland Browns, talking junk and actually backing it up, and nobody backed it up better than Randall. With 9 minutes left in the first half, Cleveland up 21-0 already. Randall did this.
Dalton with a second down and 10 up the middle. The pressure, the ball downfield. It's picked off on the play. Picked off by Demarius Randall. Randall, it'll be his third pick. They're playing him at safety now, a converted cornerback. Dalton has not thrown any interceptions against Cleveland in a long, long time.
Andy Dalton completely airmails that pass. Randall picks it off near midfield, could have had a nice return, but instead chooses to run it over to the Bengals sideline and hand it directly to Hugh Jackson, his former boss. And believe me, that was not some sort of tribute. That was like vengeance. That was vitriol. It was awesome. Hugh Jackson gets fired by Cleveland, then is brought in to help the Bengals beat the Browns, who they still had to play twice, and promptly gets his head and a game ball handed to him by his old team. Win that game, he probably gets a game ball in the locker room. Lose that game, and he's getting a game ball on the field. And Randall's teammates loved it. Take safety, Jabril Peppers. Here's what he had to say.
He had a pick six. He had blockers. He had the sideline. But he saw Hugh. He gave him the ball. So swaggy. It was just the way he did it was just so swaggy, man. So, you know, you need that.
Listen how hyped he is, man. He loved it. He loved it. He literally is saying the guy had a pick six. He had a house call, but instead ran the ball over to his former coach. That was more important to him. I mean, it was cool. It really was cool. It was awesome. But I got to ask the question. Is it really worth giving up field position and a possible pick six, Jabril? He said, quote, it was worth it. It was so worth it. Then the look on Coach Hugh's face, man, oh my God, it was definitely worth it, man, end quote. Again, they were up three touchdowns when it happened. But how little do they think of their head coach that they think that was the right call, that that was the right move? And they only look worse than one of his former players finding him on the sideline and handing him the ball that he just picked was Hugh's reaction to it. Randall clowns Hugh badly, and Hugh responds by taking the ball and patting Randall on the helmet, totally oblivious to how badly Randall just humiliated him. I mean, Hugh could not have looked any more oblivious than he did in that moment. Even more oblivious than he did the entire time he was winning only one game in two seasons as the Browns head coach. Even more oblivious than the Browns ownership looked for keeping Hugh around as long as they did. And believe me, Randall was not the only one. He was not the only one fired up to see Hugh Jackson on the opposing sideline. Baker Mayfield, who had a career-high 4 TD passes and a rating of 143.9, had some hot sauce in the post-game presser, too. But before we get to the presser, how about that quick note about his post-game handshake with Jackson? Yeah, I know I'm spending an awful lot of time on a so-called special assistant, but this to me was wild. So Hugh goes in for the hug. Mayfield instead hits him with a handshake. And not just any handshake, but by all appearances, the dead fish handshake. And he was backpedaling the entire time. Mayfield was like Darrell Revis in his prime, sinking the hips, getting flexion in the knees and ankles, and backpedaling away to avoid anything more than that dead fish that he handed to Hugh Jackson. Why? Well, let Baker explain himself.
Left Cleveland, goes down to Cincinnati. I don't know. It's just somebody that was in our locker room asking for us to play for him and then goes to a different team. We play twice a year. Everybody can have their spin on it, but that's how I feel.
Man, I love that guy. Love that guy. So much fuel. He is running on rocket fuel, jet fuel, and there was more.
That's just how it is now. That's how I'm going to treat it every time we play him, but it's nothing, you know, there's no hate. That's just how it is. That's how I'm going to treat it, and I think that's how our team should treat it too.
Maybe no hate, but certainly no love. Certainly no love. Hey, and by the way, have you noticed how much better Mayfield has gotten since Jackson and Todd Haley were fired? I mean, he was good before. He's already great. He's great now. So if you're a Browns fan, and at this point, we pretty much all should be, that's what should get you really hyped. Forget that you just beat the Bengals, because everybody does now, and your old coach. Baker Mayfield's playing like a legend, and he's breaking records on a weekly basis. He literally is changing the vibe and the culture of the entire organization. You know, the thing that you're supposed to do if you're selected number one overall. The fact that this guy was ever compared to Johnny Manziel is pretty impossible to fathom. So the old Browns would have watched their coach get hired by their rival midseason and then promptly lose two games in a row. The new Browns watch their coach get hired by their rival midseason, and they talk junk about it. They beat him. They humiliated him. And then they talk more junk about it afterwards. Man, they're not scared. They're not intimidated. And they are awesome. And they'll let you know about it too. Just ask Demarius Randall about whether he was concerned that Hugh Jackson was telling the Bengals all the Browns' secrets. He said, quote, "We ain't got no secrets. We're talented. That's the secret. I promise you, we're talented. Everybody in the world knows we're talented." End quote. Hell yes. Hell yes. America's team, the Cleveland Browns. Browns fans, am I the only one today who's going to hype you? Or are you going to get your collective asses in here and show your team some love and stick your chest out some? Because for the first time in a long time, you actually can. Browns. Demarius Randall, man, that was just so swaggy. That was a great move. Hey, but Demarius, why? Why would you do something like that as opposed to taking even more yardage and maybe taking it all the way to the house?
Why did you give him the ball?
I mean, that's just something I always said I was going to do. I mean, I might just want to give him the ball. I mean, I never gave him one when he was with the Browns, so I mean, I just thought that he needed one.
Did you say anything to you, or did he say anything back?
He just said thank you for the ball.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Hugh didn't even know what was going on. Hugh had no idea how bad of a look that was. Oh, thanks. Thanks for giving me the ball. You must like me. That's not why he gave it to you, Hugh. He gave you the ball. You took the ball. You accepted the ball. You patted him on the helmet. And then all of a sudden, you're looking to give the ball back. Like, oh, he's clowning me. Right. Right. And they still are. Coming off a really interesting NFL weekend, I think. When you go back to Thanksgiving night, you had a number of top level action, top teams playing, but still a lot went down this past weekend. Joining us right now to talk about that is an NFL Network analyst. He is a Super Bowl champion, a three-time Pro Bowler. You can follow him on Twitter at SeanO'Hara60. You can watch him every Wednesday on NFL Network's NFL Playbook at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Sean O'Hara is my guest. Sean, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing well. How are you, man?
Doing great, Sean. Great to talk to you again. Thanks so much. Sean, let me start with the Saints. They won again on Thanksgiving, and they've won 10 straight. And most of those games, Sean, have not been close. When you look at their offense now, what is the thing that stands out to you the most?
Well, the play of their tackles has been phenomenal. Ryan Ramczyk, the right tackle. Teron Armstead, the left tackle, has been phenomenal. And when Teron Armstead went down a couple of weeks ago, I thought, oh boy, this could really, you know, change their offense, and now all of a sudden the protection could be different. Jermon Bushrod has stepped in at left tackle, and he's been phenomenal. I think he gave up one entire pressure in the entire game at left tackle, so they haven't missed a beat. I think it's been remarkable how balanced they have been. I think we've seen so many years where with Drew Brees at quarterback, you kind of become a passaholic, and I think we've seen Sean Payton fall victim to that as well. Drew Brees, for a number of years, led the league in passing yards and attempts, and you see why. I mean, he's having an MVP season, but the addition of Camagram, I call him, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, has really given them some great balance, and it's helped them be more physical offensively. But they are so good at running the football and then building their play action off of that, whether it's a play action screen pass to a running back or even to a tight end, or a screen play to a receiver. But most of their big chunk plays, remarkably, come off play action, but they come on first down, which tells you they're doing a good job of running the ball on first down as well.
Sean O'Hara joining us. So, Sean, with that balance and with the defense coming on as well, in your mind, are they the best team in football right now?
They are. They're the best team. They're the most complete team. I mean, we saw a Monday Night Football game a couple weeks ago, and everybody marveled about how good the offense was. But in that same sense, the defense was atrocious. So that's how you led to all those points. And we saw the Saints take care of the Rams a few weeks ago. I think when you look at defensively, how well they get after the quarterback and how well they're stopping the run is big. You know, they went and traded for Eli Apple during the season, got an extra corner, which they certainly needed. And I think as long as they can continue to put up big points, their defense can be in full attack mode, and that's kind of where they're best.
Now, Sean, speaking of Monday night, I saw you tweeting during that game. As an offensive lineman, what do you think when you watch Aaron Donald playing at the level that he's playing at right now?
Good Lord. when you're an offensive lineman and you play a guy like Aaron Donald, like, people ask me all the time, Jim, who's the toughest guy I've ever played against, the toughest guy to block? And it was John Randall. That's my answer every time, and I'll never forget playing against him. I didn't even get him in his heyday. I got him when he was in Seattle, not when he was in Minnesota. But
wow.
He's one of those guys where I remember you break the huddle and you're walking up to the line and you're saying, please don't line up over me. And if he's on the other side, you're like, whew, okay. But you know the center's going to slide that way because you got to give help. And if he's on you, you know, I'm making every run game call, run play, blocking scheme I can to make him think it's a run play. Because a guy like Aaron Donald is just like John Randall. If you come up to the line and he knows it's pass, that's a wrap. Like, he's already thinking about his move and his second move. You know, sometimes if he doesn't beat you with his first move, it's the counter move that's just as good. Well, John Randall had all those moves. He had the club, he had the rip, he had the Reggie White hump move, the spin move, the bull rush. Aaron Donald has all those moves. So as an old lineman, when you walk up, you know, I think the one thing you think about early on in the game is, man, should I cut him? I'm just going to cut him. I don't care if it's a pass or a run. Just let him know, hey, I'm going to keep doing this all game long because that's the only way I can slow you down. It's probably the worst feeling in the world as an old lineman when you're going against him and you know you're one-on-one. You're almost helpless. So, yeah, good luck to all those guys. You know, I'm sure that every offensive lineman in the NFC West is not happy that he signed a long-term deal.
Sean O'Hara joining us. He is a Super Bowl champion, NFL Network analyst as well. You can follow him on Twitter at SeanO'Hara60. Sean, I've got Tariq Cohen on the show coming up in hour number three today. What do you make of the Bears' offense right now and what Matt Nagy's done with it?
You know, it's it's been pretty remarkable how well they've been able to kind of create a running game without really getting a big season out of Jordan Howard. And I think, you know, you look at what he did his first couple of years, you thought he was going to build on that. But they've done a great job creating space for Tariq. You know, you see him, he's kind of their change of pace back, and it'll be a reverse or a screen or a little gadget play. You know, I think he's done a great job, like we saw Andy Reid do for so many years in Philly, and like he's doing down in Kansas City, do a good job of getting running backs in space. You know, when you think back to Andy Reid and some of his big offenses, and, you know, Brian Westbrook, you know, you think about all the running backs that he had, and he's doing the same thing with Kareem Hunt. I see Nagy doing a lot of those same things with Tariq Cohen. I think their offensive line has played better than probably a lot of people realize. Cody Whitehair, their center, has done a really good job. And their rookie, James Daniels, the left guard, he's had a really good rookie season. So I think those guys are doing a good job up front. When you have a guy like Mitch Trubisky that can add an element to the run game, not just in scrambling, but the quarterback design runs, I think it makes it really hard for defenses, and I think that, that the running backs are benefiting from it.
We're talking to Sean O'Hara. Sean, in terms of the Giants, and I'm trying to cover as much ground as I can before I let you go, they had a 19-3 lead in yesterday's game against Philadelphia, then it all comes apart. So when you're watching them, I'm curious, what kind of thoughts do you have? And Eli Manning's taken so much heat in the media in recent years. How much of their struggles were on him?
I think the struggles, you know, it's like hot potato. Everybody's taking a turn. You know, and look, Eli has missed some throws. He's missed some reads. You know, he's had a couple of bad plays where he thought, oh, man, he just looks, you know, he looks like a giraffe back there. You know, and then there's other times where I say, wow, man, that was a great throw. Receiver ran the wrong route. Or, you know what, he had a chance to make a big play, and the offensive line couldn't block a doorway. And so this offense just – you know, it seems like guys just take turns messing up. An offensive lineman gets beat, my bad. You know, a tight end gets beat one-on-one, you know, my bad. You know, the receiver quarterback not on the same page. And then even Pat Shurmur, you know, I think that there's plenty of blame to go around. You know, I think he's had a number of games where he's gotten away from the run game. He wasn't patient enough and didn't allow those big runs to pop. I think in this last game, you look at it and you say, man, you know, how did Saquon Barkley have 9 carries for almost 100 yards in the first half and only end up with 13 carries in a game that you had a lead in? You know, the Giants, back-to-back weeks, they scored a touchdown on their opening drive. So this is new territory for them. You would think that they would just, you know, I know they want to stay aggressive and keep the gas, you know, pedal to the floor, but Saquon Barkley is your best player. And I don't know why he still hasn't had, you know, 25-plus carries on a weekly basis. He had 27 carries last week, the most he's ever had. The week before that, he had 20. Those are the first two 20-carry games he's had all year. And that, to me, look, somebody's going to have to answer that question when I come in on Monday morning. We've got an L because we didn't run this clock out and find a way to take over the game.
Sean O'Hara, my guest. Sean, in terms of offensive line play, it's taken criticism, I mean, across the board over the past few years. And the thing that keeps coming up, Sean, is the prevalence of the spread offense in high school and college. Do you think that's leading to poor offensive line play? What do you make of that criticism?
Well, I think there may be a little bit to some of that, but I think, you know, if that is your answer, why the offensive line play is so bad because all these spread offenses, well, if all they do is throw the ball, then they should be really good pass protectors, right? And they're not. And you look at the sacks around the league right now, you know, you look at the poor pass protection, you know, I think that there's a number of factors in there. I think, number one, the biggest factor is the limited amount of padded practices you have. That is directly correlating to the poor pass blocking, the poor run blocking, the poor tackling that we're seeing in the NFL. All those things are connected. All right, why are passing offenses so successful right now, and why are passing offenses so prevalent? Because you can work on that without pads. You can go out there and do 7-on-7. You can run your pass operations and tell the defense, hey, we're not tackling, we're not hitting anybody, you just tag off. That's what you can work on when you're not in pads. It's the run game. It's, you know, really getting messy and putting the pads on, going full pads. That's when you find out how you run the football. That's when you find out who your offensive linemen are. And the fact that they have less of those in training camp, you certainly don't have any of those in the spring, But that is hindering the growth of the offensive lineman from a technique standpoint. And it also slows down the chemistry with your group, because the only time to get that full game action, full speed and full pads, is really in the games, so the preseason games. So some of these guys are going into week one, and they've maybe played 25 snaps together as a starting five. Certainly when you look at the Giants, with five new offensive linemen, they're already on their third center. They're already on their third guard. They're on their second right tackle. So all of that change, you know, really makes it hard.
Sean, this is one of the things I like about watching you, is you turn every segment into a master class on football. Listen, before you go, today is Cyber Monday. Tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. And you created the Sean O'Hara Foundation, which has a particular focus on supporting research and awareness for cystic fibrosis. That was a mission that you took on a while back when Sean Squires, the son of a Giants employee, was diagnosed with CF. Sean calls you one of his best friends. How would you describe him, and what have you learned from watching him deal with cystic fibrosis?
Yeah, I appreciate you giving him a shout out. Sean's a special kid. You know, when I first met him, we kind of shared the same first name, and I didn't even know he was battling cystic fibrosis. But meeting him at such a young age, it's been over, you know, 10, 11 years now, and seeing him grow into a young boy and a young man has been remarkable. You know, when I see and once I learned what he goes through on a daily basis, you know, 55 pills he has to take before breakfast, the constant lung therapy that I see him going through, I just think back to my childhood, and you know, I wouldn't want him to do any of that stuff. So he does it all without complaining. It's just kind of his routine now, kind of like a lot of people would go and work out. He just, you know, he ventures through. But I've never really heard him complain about any of that. I think he's been given a great opportunity to go out and motivate and inspire some of these other young kids that are battling cystic fibrosis, that think that they can't do all the things that they really want to do. They can't accomplish their dreams. He's a great role model for them to just kind of say, hey, look, Sean is doing all this. He's living on his own in New York City. You know, he loves music, and it's great to see him kind of fulfill some of his dreams and also provide an opportunity for these other young kids and these other young families that are going through that to say, look, I could still do what I want to do. Despite having to deal with this awful disease.
He's an NFL Network analyst, a Super Bowl champ, and you can watch Sean every Wednesday on NFL Network's NFL Playbook at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Sean, great to get caught up. Really appreciate your time. Thanks so much, Sean.
All right, thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Look who I found. Lauren in Naples. She emails me, what's up, Romy? Fire Jim Harbaugh. What kind of display was that? I couldn't even watch that gross display. Oh, it's hard to be a Michigan fan. Thanks for ruining our alleged revenge tour. Good win, you crook, Urban. Angry and royally pissed fan, Lauren in Naples.
I'm your clone, guy.
I'm your host, gal. It's been a little while, Lauren. It's been a minute. Good to see you. This email says, dear Jim Harbaugh, put the coffee down.
Put that coffee down.
Regards, getting steamrolled by your rival again and again and again.
Coffee's for closers only.
Signed, Scott in the Bay. War not even starting about that dumpster fire that resides at USC. And this email reads, Four more years. Signed, the Columbus Committee to Re-Elect the Khakis. Tim and Seabus. Yeah, I'm sure in Columbus you hope nothing ever changes in Ann Arbor. All right, so I know it was a long Thanksgiving weekend. So let's go back to Friday for a moment, since so many of you want to talk about this. 24 hours before Michigan played Ohio State, and Wolverine fans were feeling it. The Michigan men, feeling it. They had shaken off that season-opening loss at the hands of Notre Dame. They had ripped off 10 in a row. They had the best defense in the country. Their players were guaranteeing a win over the Buckeyes. They were all fired up about their so-called revenge tour. And they were about to face an Ohio State team that barely beat Maryland in overtime. An Ohio State team that got hammered by Purdue. Michigan was favored going into Columbus, and for good reason. On paper, they were better. and they had the top-ranked defense in the nation. In other words, this was the year that it all ended. This was the year they finally got over. In other words, who's got it better than us?
Who's got it better than us?
Let's not get into that just yet.
Let's not get into that yet.
You know why? Because then the game happened. Ohio State, 62. Michigan, 39. And it wasn't even that close. Not nearly that close. That score does Michigan a favor because they did not belong on the same field as the Buckeyes. They got hammered by a team that got blown out by Purdue and barely beat Maryland. In fact, I'm pretty sure Western Michigan would have been more competitive against Ohio State than the actual Michigan was. Ohio State scored 20 against Purdue and then went out and dropped 62 on the alleged best defense in the country. 62, the most ever allowed by a Michigan team, ever in the history of Michigan college football. 62 points is the most they have ever allowed in a regulation football game. I mean, that's going way back. Back to the days when dudes wore leather helmets and boots with nails in the bottom. So that wasn't just a bad loss. That wasn't just a horrible loss. That was a historically horrible loss. And Jim Harbaugh is now the first Michigan coach to start 0-4 against Ohio State. Which begs the question. I tweeted this, and let me ask it one more time. What's more humiliating, 62 points or an 0-4 record against Ohio State? Let me answer it for you. Yes. Not a half a hundred. 62. And it could have been so much worse. It could have been north of 70. Easy. Because Ohio State got cute twice in the red zone and had to settle for field goals. And because they took a knee in the red zone at the end of the game. I mean, how rich would that have been if they punched it in one more time and went for two? Either way, Michigan was lucky that it wasn't 75 or more. Forget half a hundred. They barely stayed within three quarters of a hundred. But don't take my word for it. Ask Michigan safety Tyree Kinnell.
You know, it slowly, you know, devastated us throughout the game. And, you know, knowing all the yards they were putting up and how easily they were scoring, it was tough. Extremely tough.
Yeah, so go ahead and remind me. Go ahead and remind me once again why Jim Harbaugh is such an awesome, awesome coach. Remind me of that. Because time and time again, his offense ran into a stacked box and got nowhere. And wasn't D coordinator Don Brown supposed to be some sort of defensive wizard? Because Ohio State just carved him up and nobody thought that was a dominant Ohio State offense coming in. That crew looked like a Big 12 defense out there. And not a good Big 12 defense. A bad one. Because they were just running around, chasing one Buckeye after another, just sucking in Ohio State's exhaust on every single play. And what about Shea Patterson? I thought that was the program's savior. Wasn't everybody hyping him as the savior and the guy who would turn it all around? Were people really actually saying that Michigan belonged in the playoff? I mean, they were complete and utter garbage. Seriously.
Garbage.
They were awful. I mean, they were truly terrible. You have to work pretty hard to give up 62 points in a college football game. That's more than a point per minute. And again, it could have been so much worse. And no, Michigan fan, I'm not interested in hearing about your injuries. Every single team has injuries at this point in the season. Every team. Good coaches are supposed to overcome all that. And if you pay Jim Harbaugh what you're paying Jim Harbaugh, he should find a way to win with all those alleged monster recruiting classes that he's brought in with all those wacky, wacky antics. And nor am I here to clown Harbaugh and go with Lloyd Carbaugh blast, like some of you Michigan fans are doing. At least 2L Lloyd won half a national title, which is half a national title more than your savior has. Jim Harbaugh is getting paid a hell of a lot of money. That's fine. Except he's getting paid big money and he's not a big money coach. He's not. And Saturday put an end to the idea that Harbaugh is in the same class as Nick Saban or Urban Meyer as head coaches. Because he's not. He's nowhere near that. I'd say you're paying Nick Saban money and getting Brady Hoke results. But Hoke never gave up 62 to Ohio State in a game where he was favored. Now, going back to Lauren and Naples' point that this guy should be fired. Listen, don't get me wrong. He's not a terrible coach. I'm not saying that. In fact, I'll say it. Harbaugh is a good coach. He's just not that good. He's good, but he's not that good because he's had one great recruiting class after another, and what does he have to show for it? No wins over Ohio State, no Big Ten titles, no playoffs, no nothing. Since he's arrived, he has zero Big Ten titles. In that same time, Meyer, Mark D'Antonio, and James Franklin have all won Big Ten titles. Harbaugh's fine. He's fine. He's a pretty good coach. Calling for him to get fired is stupid. Yeah, because one, I'm not sure Michigan can do any better. And two, I know this, they certainly can't pay much more and get much less in return. So, Michigan fans, I wish I had some good news for you. But that was the best chance you're ever going to have of beating Urban Meyer and Ohio State. You win that game, you beat an extremely beatable Ohio State team, one that got hammered by Purdue, one that nearly lost to Maryland, and then you're on your way to the playoff. Instead, you get humiliated in the worst way possible. So, Michigan fan, if not now, then when? And the answer is probably never. And one more quick note about this. One more quick note that should not get lost in all of this. Yes, Jim Harbaugh got embarrassed. Yes, he got pantsed and stuffed into a clown suit on national television by Urban Meyer. But let's not make Urban Meyer out to be some sort of hero here. Let's not talk about all the so-called obstacles that he and his program have had to overcome this year. He covered for an alleged abuser and lied about it and then blamed those lies on his medication. He got off easily. And everybody who's out there making him out to be some sort of hero for how he guided his team through this season needs to take a long, hard look in the mirror themselves. This guy's no hero. He can coach. He can coach. But this guy's no hero. Stop making him out to be. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to the phones quickly. We go to Grand Rapids. Maury in Grand Rapids. Maury, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Oh, Jim, I'm doing all right, buddy. Thanks for taking the call. But you know what, dude? I am dyed-in-the-wool, true blue Michigan fan. And I got to tell you, I got to get a refund on that Michigan tour, dude, because Jim Harbaugh, for all the accolades, and I've been in his corner the whole time, Jim, I'm not going to lie. But I sat there and watched that cheesy play call. I'm going, dude, where's the bag of tricks you promised us? And what about Don Brown? Was that Oklahoma's defense that switched with Michigan? I mean, the dude's the master of the adjustments and bringing all that pressure on the quarterback. What a joke. That Ohio State quarterback said he was licking his chops. Dude, I don't know what to think, Romy. I hear you, Maury.
You have very right to be frustrated. Everything you just said is true. Everything you just said is true. That's what I said. Their defense. They're alleged top-ranked defense. In fact, it's not alleged. They were the top-ranked defense in America coming in. And they not only look like a Big 12 defense, like I said, they look like a bad Big 12 defense. I don't know, Jim. Maybe you want to change up. Maybe you want to make an adjustment. Why are you running it into the line, into a stacked box? Why are you not changing? It's not working. They could not have looked any worse. He was the 119th pick overall back in 2017. The Bears are at the Giants on Sunday. Tariq Cohen is my guest. Tariq, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Hey, listen, before we talk about the game that you had on Thursday, let me ask you this. What's it like to play on Thanksgiving Day against the Lions when you know that literally the entire nation is watching and so are your peers are as well?
It's great. You know, it's a football tradition to play football on Thanksgiving. So, you know, to finally be a part of that was great. It was a great thing to be a part of.
So you're in the middle of that whole thing. Mitchell Trubisky was unable to play on Thursday, which meant that Chase Daniel was going to be under center. And as an offense, you didn't have a lot of time to prepare with Chase leading up to the game. So how were you guys able to come together, get on the same page, and execute as well as you did?
because, you know, Chase is a veteran, and he's been around the offense for a long time. So him coming in, you know, it's really not much to adapt to when he knows the offense better than most of everybody on the team. So when you got a quarterback that can step in that easily, you know, it makes wonders for the rest of the guys.
Tariq Cohen joining us. Then early in the fourth quarter, you caught a pass from Daniel. You go all the way for a touchdown. What did you see on that particular play? And then obviously, how good did that feel to get into the end zone?
It's a play that we've been having for a couple weeks now. We just haven't gotten the right position to call it. And we finally got in, you know, like the big red zone where we could call it. And Chase put a perfect ball up, and I ran a good route, and you see the product of that.
And then when you got there, you laid down, took a nap. It was a great celebration. What was the thinking that went into that celebration?
My special team coach told me to do that. He said I should eat a piece of turkey and then, you know, go to sleep. So we did that.
I like it. Tariq Cohen joining us. Pretty much we all did it, except you got it to the house. Now, Coach Matt Nagy had that play in the playbook for a while. He said he'd been waiting for the right time to call it. Obviously, that was the right time. What's it been like to play in his offense?
It's definitely been great because you never know, you know, where you're going to be in the offense, which makes it so much fun. It makes it like backyard football again. You know, you can be split out wide at the running back position, or like line up in the slot, you know, and that's not just for me. That's for any position. So I feel like, you know, it just makes offense fun.
You know, then you guys went through a stretch where you faced Detroit twice and Minnesota once in 12 days. You won all three of those games, making a huge statement in the NFC North. What's it say about this team and how good you can be and your upside?
It just shows how much we're growing, you know. It shows that we're a young team, but, you know, we're mature enough to handle getting our bodies in shape and getting mentally prepared for games, well, for a test schedule, like three back-to-back games, that fast of a turnaround. So, you know, it's another challenge that we took, and we ran with it, and we got it completed.
I mean, you're 8-3 now. You've won five straight. You've already got a lead in the division. So what's the vibe like inside the locker room and around the facility when you come to work every day?
Oh, it's a good vibe. You know, it's, everybody's very happy, very eager. But it's also a hungry vibe. You know, we want more than just 8-3. After we finished last year, you know, we want as high as we can go this year. You know, we want to see what our ceiling is.
Tariq Cohen of the Bears joining us. Now, you were part of that 2017 rookie class, which also includes guys like Eddie Jackson, who's got three turnovers returned for TDs this season. You and other members of the 2017 class felt like you were going to be the guys to help turn this organization around. What gave you that feeling when you first arrived, and how does it feel to see it happening and play out?
What gave us that feeling is that all of us, you know, were brought in to contribute immediately. So we all saw playing time, and we all did well, you know, our rookie season. So that's what we really found out. Like, you know, we're going to be part of this turnaround. Like, we're going to be the difference makers, and it starts with our class. So, you know, we took that, and we ran with it, and we take that very seriously. You know, all of us still talk about how it's our class, and how it's our class that's going to make the change. And, you know, we keep that in mind and just remember back on that.
Tariq Cohen joining us for a few more moments. So when you see Jackson scoring the way he does on defense, you see Khalil Mack doing what he's doing on defense, how much does that motivate and fire up the offense? In other words, do you feel like the offense and the defense were able to feed off each other?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That goes hand-in-hand, you know, with just the overall game of football. You know, if a play happens on special teams, a big play, say if I have a big return, it gets the offense, you know, good field position for easy score. And then say, like, if Eddie Jackson scores a touchdown, you know, it don't get easier than that. It gets offensive points. It gets the whole team points. But, you know, we're very excited that Eddie's having the season he's having. And also excited that Khalil Mack is here and he's just, you know, dominating the way that he does.
And speaking of returns, you're the leading Pro Bowl vote getter for returners in the NFC. What would it mean to you to win that vote and to go to the Pro Bowl?
It would be amazing. You know, it would speak on the support I have, you know, from everyone that knows me and follows me. And so I would have to give all the credit to them, you know, because I don't know what it is. I think it's like it's a percentage of the votes, right, that count, actually.
Right.
But, yeah, so it would be wonderful, you know, for me to get that nod.
You know, you and I have talked in the past about your journey to this point and how a lot of schools overlooked you. Now that you are where you are right now, you're having a big second season, you're getting mentioned as a Pro Bowl candidate, your team's in first place. I mean, is there any part of you that wants to say, how do you all like me now?
You know, I just keep trying to get better. That's the way I like to show that, you know. And then when it's all said and done, then I like to say that, you know, I don't know how I'm going to finish up yet. So, you know, when I'm done with football, then I look back, you know, talk to all those people.
Really? Not till the end of your career?
Yeah, I still got more to go. They can still be proven right, you know, if I mess up.
Tariq Cohen joining us. All right, so we've talked about the work that you've done also in the community, and it's something that you continue to do. You've said that when you were growing up, you didn't get a chance to meet a lot of people who were in this position that you're in right now. So what's it mean to you to know that there are kids out there who do get to meet you and then get inspiration from you? What's that like?
Oh, it's great, you know, because I could only dream of something like this happening to me when I was younger. So for me to see their eyes light up when they see me and, you know, be happy that they're meeting the NFL guy, it's just great, you know, just to be that type of positive reinforcement in their lives if they don't have any, you know, is what some kids need.
Good for you. Well done. Nearly 800 yards from scrimmage, 6 TDs on the season. The Bears are at the Giants on Sunday. They're in first. Tariq Cohen, my guest. Tariq, great to have you back. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Talk to you again, Tariq Cohen. All right. They're taking care of their business now, and they're doing it on both sides of the ball. Chase Daniel just steps right in. They don't miss anything whatsoever. Beat Detroit on Thanksgiving Day, and now they've got the Giants on Sunday. The Giants had a huge lead against Philadelphia, and they let that get away. Odell Beckham was not happy about that. Wanted to know why they didn't attack a Philadelphia secondary that was all banged up. You know what I have to say about that? He's right. Sean O'Hara came on in the first hour and said, at the same time, Saquon Barkley is the best player they have. Why are you not feeding that guy 25 times a game when he is your best player? Odell Beckham, who you could also argue is their best player, said, why are we not attacking their secondary? Why aren't we going vertical with it when they're busted up? And I think both are right, or they are both right. I'll tell you something else I'm getting, and I haven't gotten into this yet, but it's all the rage, both on Twitter and on email. NFC North, Viking fans talking junk about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Packer fans beside themselves getting beaten last night. Hey, let me just say this. Where were those big, bad Vikings when I went all in for them and with them on the NFL and CBS? And Chicago embarrassed them. Viking fan, where the hell were you then? Better yet, where was your team then? But they got over last night. So I want to talk NFC North in a minute. But first, we go to the phones. Let's go to Buffalo. Hey, one thing about Buffalo, before I go to Buffalo, did you check out the Bills Act yesterday? You check out the Bills. With literally nothing to play for. Standing in. Had their quarterbacks back. Making a statement. And Jacksonville just laying down again. The Jags. Buffalo at least is fighting back. At least showing some heart. And don't tell me, like, Leonard Fournette showed heart and fought back. That was a tie game when that went down. Is there anything dumber than NFL players giving each other the hands while they're wearing helmets? Tell me something dumber than that. Having said all that, let's go to Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. Rick, what's going on?
Being right never gets old, Jim. And boy, did I have myself a weekend. Jalen Ramsey looked like an idiot for running his mouth. I was right. Doug Marrone's an incompetent fat ass. I was right. And that overhyped, overweight pile of dog crap, Jim Harbaugh, can't win the big game. It never felt so friggin' good being so friggin' right. Saying Harbaugh crapped his pants Saturday afternoon doesn't even scratch the friggin' surface. In 35 years of watching college football, I've never seen a bigger choke job. It was so bad, even that jock-sniffing, hero-worshipping fanboy Mark in Boston had no excuses for his Lord and Savior. And Harbaugh made my day even better when he went all-out two-year-old and ran out of the post-game presser. The entire college football world got to see he's nothing more than a classless, gutless, spineless, cowardly little bitch. But keep on rooting for him, Michigan football man. Just more evidence of how stupid you really are. And don't you dare hop on the Michigan basketball bandwagon. We don't want your type, and we sure as hell don't need your type. War John Beilein's 800 career wins. War the Sabres' 9-game winning streak. It's no coincidence they haven't lost since we announced the Buffalo Jungle outing. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rock him again. Rick in Buffalo. He's angry. He's violent. He threatens people. And he had himself a weekend. Rick in Buffalo, 1-800-636-8686. All right, going to the stack of emails quickly to set this up. Dear Jim, another game, another loss, another week where Aaron Rodgers gets outplayed by the quarterback on the other team. I haven't seen a QB fall this far since Broadway Joe tried to French Susie Colbert. Dude wasn't even the best Aaron on his own team last night. Signed, Brett from Bugaha, Vikings standard bearer. ATP for Packer fans. You like that?
You like that?
You like that?
You like that? You like that?
Look at her. She's back. Hi, Jim. Aaron Rodgers is the most spoiled sport on the planet. He's supposed to be the GOAT, but he never wins anything. And I'm sick of looking at his sour face sticking out of that stupid yellow helmet. Sarah T. getting saltier. Saltier this hour than she was last hour. It's probably got nothing to do with the fact, Sarah, that that guy frequently is compared to your guy. That guy frequently is believed to be better than your guy. That guy is thought to be the GOAT over your guy. It's got nothing to do with that, right? Sarah T. in Providence, Rhode Island. She's looking to break her record. You know she wants a third one so badly. A third email read, I mean. Dear Rome, can we touch on the disaster which is going on in Green Bay right now? With their season on the line, in the last two games, they score 3 points in the second half of each. That is unacceptable with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. Not that he shouldn't take some heat too, but it's mostly on coaching. Hopefully Mike McCarthy is out of a job by the time this show is over today. Joe and Superior, war jousting. I've got something to say about jousting. You like that?
You like that?
You like that?
You like that?
I like jousting. I still like jousting. I like that.
You like that? You like that?
So how much of that's on coaching staff? How much of that's on the quarterback? How much of that is on the guys around him? Dear Romes, Aaron freaking Rodgers, more like Kirk freaking Cousins. Rodgers had some pretty pedestrian numbers last night. 199 passing yards. He plays better hurt than healthy. I hope someone got the license plate number of that purple bus that ran over his ass last night. 0-6 on the road this year. Signed, Chris. True. They have not won away from Lambeau. In fact, they're working a long losing streak away from Lambeau. Couldn't be going any worse. Sunday night was not just a big-time rivalry in the NFC North with the Vikings and Packers. I mean, that was essentially an elimination game. Essentially. Like, win and you're still in the mix in a wild-card bid. Lose and you're buying mixers for that cabana that you may as well rent for January. Because look at the Bears. They just keep right on trucking. After they dropped the hammer on Minnesota last Sunday, they go into the D and they ruin Thanksgiving for Matty P. And they did it with Chase Daniel at quarterback. When you're pulling a dude off the sideline with two career starts in a decade of clipboard work, and then you're out-dueling Matt Stafford, then you know you've got that thing rolling. Chase Daniel. This guy hadn't been unleashed since he was going in on the Big 12 at Mizzou back in 08. Yet this past few days, this guy was ripping ham off the two Matt's plates, going 27 for 37 with two TDs and no picks. Big, big performance for the big man. And another reason why I just should not have doubted the Bears in the first place. I'm just giving the Bears a little bit of credit. And we're talking NFC North football. How much of this is on the quarterback and how much of this is on the coach? And how hot is Mike McCarthy's seat right now? Rand St. Paul tweets, Ricks, never seen a bigger choke job? Well, that's a relief. Signed, Scott Norwood. Man, you act like that was some kind of chip shot or something. Guy's got a bad rap. That was no chippy. That wasn't like some 21-yard field goal to win a Super Bowl. That was not an easy kick. That was a long kick. And Rand St. Paul, I'm going to go with Rick. That was a bigger choke job. Again, Michigan football has never allowed more points in a football game ever. And they did so against their biggest rival in a year when it was all set up and they were allegedly in the same conversation with Alabama. The alleged one team that could stand in and trade with Alabama. And they just had 62 dropped on them by their biggest rival. Norwood missed a 47-yard field goal. Again, not 27 yards, not even 37 yards, 47 yards. I mean, sure, he's paid to make that kick. But don't make that thing out to be like it was a point after. No, Rick had that right. As usual, Rick was right. I found my next guest. He is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1. He is a writer for The Athletic. He is a New York Times bestselling author. His latest book, The QB, is out in paperback. Good friend of the program. He is everywhere. We are joined by Bruce Feldman. Bruce, I know you're having a busy day. Great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Good to be on with you.
Good to have you. So, from Washington beating Washington State in the snow, to Ohio State hammering Michigan, to Notre Dame beating USC, to Texas A&M and LSU going 7 overtimes, and then staff members getting into a fight, that is a wild, wild weekend in college football. What do you make of what you just saw overall?
It was crazy. I mean, to me, the craziest thing was that 7 overtime game there. LSU at A&M, you had some really questionable calls along the way. I thought both quarterbacks played really well, but it was just kind of just a crazy game. And then you have the end of it, after the fact, where you have this incident between what it sounds like Jimbo Fisher's nephew getting into it with a staffer who has Parkinson's. And Kevin Faulk is involved, the former Patriots running back who now works at LSU, just kind of, it's a really nutty, awkward moment for the SEC to kind of sort out. And in a lot of ways, it's like, the game isn't nationally relevant to the playoff, but it feels like it was probably one of the more odd things in it. What has been a kind of an underwhelming season. Certainly beyond that, huge results out of Columbus with Ohio State once again dominating that series against Michigan. I mean, that is a relevant storyline that if you're Jim Harbaugh, that's not going away anytime soon.
No, it's not. Bruce Feldman joining us. And Bruce, you're in Columbus today doing work ahead of the Big 12 or Big 10 title game. Going into Saturday's game, all the hype was surrounding Michigan. I mean, what kind of a game were you expecting between the Wolverines and the Buckeyes this time around?
I thought the way this was trending, Jim, as good as Michigan's defense was, as much as Ohio State's offensive line had struggled, I thought this would be the year they could get them. And it was not the case. Ohio State's offensive line really stepped up. I mean, Dwayne Haskins, I just talked to Urban Meyer. He didn't get touched in the game, and he looked like a Heisman contender. I mean, threw 6 touchdown passes. You have a really talented group of receivers stepped up, and they made the number one defense in the country look really average. I mean, Michigan only gave up 7 touchdown passes all season going into that game, and Dwayne Haskins got 6 of them in that day. I thought it was quite a show. It was a big statement game for Ohio State, and I think, quite honestly, they reminded people, oh, yeah, this is a really talented team, and when they bring their A game, which I don't think they had all season up till that point, they could play with pretty much anybody else.
They put it all together on that day. Bruce Feldman joining us. He's actually in Columbus. So, Bruce, what about Harbaugh then? He's 0-4 against Ohio State. They won't make the college football playoff. They have not won a Big Ten title in his time there. They've watched Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State do exactly that. At what point does the patience wear out in Ann Arbor?
I think there's got to be some frustration. The patience is probably worn a little bit. But, look, they still have a really good year. But they have a problem with the other team, their arch rival, quite honestly, has more talent than they do. I think it showed up. This is a really good team. I don't think it's as good. If they play their best and Ohio State plays their best, Ohio State's going to win. They may not win by as many as they did, but he's just got to keep recruiting and developing better players. I mean, I think it's that simple. I don't think he's on the hot seat or any stretch. He's going to win. He may win 11 games this season. it's not a bad year, but I think for a lot of people, until they can finally beat the arch rival, it's going to feel like he's not getting the job done, because the job as that head coach of that program is to win the game that matters most, and he has not been able to do that.
Bruce Feldman joining us. All right, Bruce, in terms of beating the rival and being on a hot seat, how about here in Los Angeles? The patience was wearing thin among USC fans when it came to Clay Helton, and that's before he lost to UCLA and Notre Dame. But AD Lynn Swann said yesterday that Helton would be back next season. How do you think Trojan fans are going to react to that news?
Not well. I think they had already made up their mind. A lot of them didn't want Clay Helton in the first place. Now, look, to Clay Helton's credit, he won a Rose Bowl. He's won the Pac-12 title. This year was certainly a big step back. You know, they didn't have Sam Darnold. They have a good group of receivers, and I think young JT Daniels, the true freshman quarterback, he's talented. I mean, there's some reasons for optimism, but I think what Clay Helton is going to have to do is he's going to have to make some big staff hires, which quite honestly hadn't done before, and I think people look at that staff makeup and they feel like it's an underwhelming group. They don't run the football well. We saw 2 weeks ago our crew did the UCLA game, and UCLA ran it down their throats. They had a walk-on 1AA running back run for almost 300 yards against those guys. So I think there's going to be some hard questions there. Lots of people like Clay Helton. I mean, he's a genuinely decent man. But beyond that, I think some people who've been around the team look at it and go, you know what? They don't have enough of an edge. Now, that doesn't mean Clay Helton needs to have it, but he needs to find guys on his staff who I think can bring that out, especially during the week in practice, and make this a tougher, more disciplined team. I feel like that's what's been missing. I'm curious to see who he's going to hire. I think they're going to start swinging for the fences, something that didn't feel like they had done before, to surround him with that. And I think if they can make some key hires, a few big name hires who are proven guys who can help, I think that will kind of diffuse a little bit of the kind of frustration and animosity that you have from this fan base.
Bruce Feldman joining us. Bruce, let me ask you this. To that point then, and I know you've given this thought, if they need to hit a home run and they've got to take some big swings, how do you do so when the head coach is already on thin ice? Like, who's going to want to come to that situation, and do you have any big names in mind that you think they can land?
Well, I think the biggest part is whoever comes in, let's say you're going to be the offensive coordinator and take over that side. You know, Clay Helton had taken over play calling duties from T. Martin. You know, T. Martin's well-liked. He's a terrific recruiter. I could see them wanting to keep him around, but maybe, you know, certainly find a new play caller. But the question's going to be, if you're a coach and saying, all right, you know what? We knew Clay Helton was on the hot seat. We knew they struggled. They were a team that only won 5 games. If I go in there to help that team out, and all of a sudden they go from a 5-win team to a 10-win team, or even more, they win the Pac-12 title, those people who are the additions are going to get a lot of credit for that. So, you know what? Swing for the fences. I'll tell you what. One of the hottest commodities right now in coaching is a guy who just lost his head coaching job at Texas Tech. And I know a lot of people in the NFL have a lot of interest in Cliff Kingsbury. You know, that's a name that I think there's going to be a lot of people going to say, hey, at least go after somebody like that. I mean, there's a lot of good offensive coaches out there that I think USC really needs to kind of at least kick the tires on and say, hey, you know what, we're going to take a shot and take a swing. Because I think really that's what the USC fans want. They look at some of the hires he's made in the past and think, okay, these are nice guys, but that's fine at other places. USC should be doing what Urban Meyer's done, what Nick Saban's done. You know, go hire guys who are in demand and try to get them. USC has a lot of money and they have a lot of resources, and it's obviously a great place to live in Southern California. It's appealing for a lot of people. Go see if you can make that happen. To me, those are going to be the biggest recruits that Clay Helton will be going for this winter. It won't be kids in high school or kids in junior college. It's going to be grown men who can help them to prepare and make this team more disciplined and quite honestly, more focused.
Such a good point. Bruce Feldman joining us. He's working from Columbus. Bruce, one last thought. So Michigan loses. What does that mean for the college football playoff picture? Who would you have in the fourth spot right now?
You know, I'm curious what the committee's going to come out with this week, where you have Ohio State versus Oklahoma. Both really good offensive teams. I think Ohio State's resume with who they've beaten could stack up well. I mean, I think their win as they dominated Michigan is going to be better than anything that OU will have. But, you know, OU is going to get the chance to avenge their only loss, and their only loss was to Texas by 3 points, whereas Ohio State had a really bad loss. They lost to a pretty average Purdue team. They got blown out on the road. And I feel like a lot of people are looking at them going, well, they kind of stumbled and sputtered, and now they're finishing strong. I think what's going to work against them a little bit is people feel like they've been disappointing, you know, because it feels like they've been underachieving for a lot of the year. And as much as maybe you can flip it and go, okay, well, look at Oklahoma. Their defense has been horrible. Do we have confidence in that defense? Yep, Kyler Murray's been phenomenal, and the offense is really explosive. But I'm not sure how much, you know, you got one who looks like it's underachieving, and the other one who looks like they're just not very good on defense. So I think right now I'm curious to see what the committee is going to feel like they have more confidence in. Question is, I think if both teams bring their A game, I think Ohio State is the more dangerous team. But I don't know if the committee is going to feel that way when they look at just the losses. The one loss is much worse than what Oklahoma has against Texas.
Hey, Bruce, one last thing. You and I have done this a long time, and you've come on our TV shows, you've come on our radio shows, and I know you're locked in to the sport that you're covering, the thing you're working on, but what a fascinating time it is. I look at your bio, and look at the way I introduced you. Reporter for Fox Sports, FS1, writer for The Athletic, New York Times best-selling author. What an interesting time in the media landscape and the way it's shaping up right now. Like, what's your work like for you, and how different is it now than what you did even 5 or 6 years ago?
Oh, it's been dramatically different. I think the biggest thing is you got to be versatile and be open to different things. And I feel really lucky that, you know, Fox gave me the chance to do sideline. And I feel like there's a lot of people you can look at who are really good at what they do and say, okay, I don't know if I can be as good as that person or that woman is at what she does, but I can try to aspire to be that. And I mean, to me, the message is go try to be open to do as many different things. And at the core of it, I mean, I love covering college football. It's been the best job, you know, I could have ever hoped for. If you had told, you know, me when I was in junior college that this is what I get to do years later, I'd be like, okay, what finger do I have to cut off to make that happen?
Right.
You know, so I feel really, really fortunate about it. And it's, you know, like I said, it's a good time to be in the sport, because I think so much stuff you have to evolve. And you know, like I said, I'm grateful for to Fox, especially for giving me the opportunity to do some stuff that, quite honestly, I never would have dreamed I would have gotten those chances, maybe at other places.
Bruce Feldman, reporter for Fox Sports and FS1. He writes for The Athletic and is a best-selling author as well. New York Times best-selling author. Bruce, great to have you back. I know you're busy and working today. Thanks for sliding that one in.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
Good night,